Okay.
You don't get a rest. Yeah, that's it. So, it's all yours now.
Cool. Everyone doing okay? Yeah. Are we out of breath? Are we sweating like I am, or are we good? I totally understand, it's all good. If I came into my church and I saw someone like me get up and start rapping at me, I'd probably sit down like, what the heck is this? It's anyway, painful. Thank you so much to you guys for supporting us so hard. We came here 5 years ago and did a bit of a presentation on what we do and why we do it. And without you really realising, every single word that we just said in and every bar that we spit and every dance move we do is just using worship in a different way to worship Jesus. And we go in and we've seen 1.4 million young people in the last 2 years in high schools and gigs all across the world and told them about Jesus. And that music creates a platform to break the stereotype of what it is to have faith, to stand for something rather than fall for everything that's out there. And some of you might have walked in today just thinking, I didn't sign up to this. Oh, I get that, that's cool. But I believe that if we go out and we actually use what God's given us in our hands, we can actually make a change. And we just thought we'd get together, set up a band, see what happens. And I know that you guys know Lucy Britton. If you don't know Lucy Britton, she's part of the Britton clan. Tim and Wendy and Mike and Sarah in today. And they've faithfully come to Thornbury Baptist. I got married on here. I remember sat there, green, as Lucy was 55 minutes late, which I've heard is unheard of the Britton clan. And she walked in, and I literally turned, and I was like, my life is going to change forever. And it did, because you guys have supported us, and you sent us out to nations, and sent us out to different, we're going to young offenders and prisons and all kinds of stuff. But I recorded a little video for Lucy, because she couldn't be here, and she's going to explain a little bit why.
Hi everyone at Thornbury Baptist Church, I'm so sorry that we can't be there. We've got a little young boy here called Little Jack Jack, so we're having to stay up in Manchester. But we just wanted to say hi to you all. Hi Grandma, hi Grandpa! Sorry we're missing you, I'm so much shy. This is Little Willow, and how many of you have met her yet? My new little one, and this is Lovely Jack. So we wish we could be with you, but I'm afraid illness has stopped us from travelling this time. So God bless you all. Thank you so much for the support you pour into this family, the prayer that goes into us. We really feel it and we really appreciate it. So enjoy LZ7 and enjoy our lovely limbs. And we'll see you soon, hopefully. Say bye-bye. Say bye-bye.
As you can tell, Jack really wanted to be there, didn't he? Unfortunately, he's got a side show of the plops at the moment, so I didn't want anyone else to have that from meeting him today, so we left him up in Manchester. But they do sit like this, so they send their regards. On your chair, there's a few kind of little bits and pieces that I just wanted to talk to. I'm going to do a 3-minute presentation on what we do and why we do it, and then I'm going to ask you for a lot of money, and then we're going to stop, alright? Is that cool? Just for 3 minutes. I'll just do that for 3 minutes, and I was told I could get away with that, but when Thornbury Baptist first started to support us, we set up an organisation called Light. And Light is an umbrella charity that has a board of trustees that oversees everything that LZ7 does and all of our tours. And then we started a thing called Illuminate. And Illuminate is going into inner city schools all across the country, not just in the cities actually, we've been in Stroud, which is definitely not in the city. And we put on these tours all across the country in nightclubs. So we partnered with the country's largest nightclub network. And where there's a nightclub, we can put the gig for free, as if we can get the venue for free, and we can get out with all our gear. We do all the schools in the week, and we do 5 lessons a day, year 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, invite them all to a show. And then we ask the local churches to partner with us and down tools on a Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, to plant church into that local nightclub. Basically, what we're seeing is that kids just won't turn up to church. If you try to invite a young person to a church building, the first thing, the biggest key turn is parents. Parents are there going, no, hang on a minute, I've grown up with this, I've grown up with that. Our kids, it's not that they don't know Jesus, they don't want to know Jesus, they just don't know Jesus. Because no one's actually telling them. We've got this open platform in high schools to say, actually, you've got hope, you've got a future. Where the cultural thing and the cultural norm is to cut yourself when it gets down. Actually, maybe you can turn to someone that gives a monkeys about you. That's died on the cross so you took the cuts on the back so you don't have to cut. Sharing all those positive messages, and even in school assemblies, we're going to have young people handing in suicide notes, saying at the end of this gig, at the end of this week, I was going to jump off the roller coaster of life. Some people handed blades. So we've developed an online mental health resource called I'm Possible. And it's a play on the word impossible. Philippians 4:13 says, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. And we thought, well, actually, let's just give something practical to these kids. Rather than just amping them up and telling them about Jesus' invite to the show, let's actually put something in their hands, a tool in their hands, where they can actually go through to the NHS, where they're directed to councils and directed to Samaritans, and where people can actually physically help them. So that's kind of like a little summary of what we do. You've got a little bump in front of you. I'm going to explain that, but there's a video... Just going back to this thing real quick on your chair, you have a little flyer that kind of gives you the stats. And we just wanted to say thank you so much for enabling us to do all these things, because you take ownership of this, because when you send us out with the finance you give and the support you've given us to the ministry, this actually changes lives. We've had 30,000 young people go through the AAA pass already. That AAA pass is just on their phone, and it's just a new way of saying, actually, there's someone that gives a monkey's value, there's someone that's there for you. Your first steps of faith, those baby steps, that's for you. We've had the I'm Possible Mental Health Resource launch. We've been in 14 Illuminate tours, 78 schools, 76,000 young people. Peacemaker Anti-Knife Crime Initiative has been launched. We've been on that tour, playlisted all over the place, 10 million streams, 210 live shows in 24 countries. In front of 1.4 million young people, it's because of faithful people like you getting behind people like us to go out and take the life-changing message of Jesus to young people through music. So thank you so much. There are some people in here, we came here 5 years ago, there are some amazing people in here that still actually sponsor us from that last time that we came in. And you signed up at the back and you feel in your faith form and all that kind of stuff. Well, that money actually has been stopped because we changed our bank account. So if you're in here and you know the money's been going to the light, it's actually bouncing back to your account and not coming to us. So if you already support us, please do go and refill in the forms at the back. That would be really good. If you're new to it and you're thinking, actually, do you know what? Maybe I can get behind these guys. Maybe I can give them a fiver a month. Maybe I can give them a coffee a month. Maybe I can give them 10, 15, 20. Maybe give them £100 a month. That would be amazing. But every person that signs up today, we're going to give you a brand new album, just as an incentive. There's also a fridge magnet that's going to come with it as well. That fridge magnet is to go on your fridge to remind you to pray for us when we're out there doing stuff. So every time you open up and you get yourself your milk or your coffee, you just shoot up a little prayer, look after those at 7 as they're in prison today. We'll be sending you monthly updates of everything that happens to your email, of all the stuff that we're doing and all the stuff that's been done to celebrate with you guys and you come with us on that journey. Does that make sense to everybody? We can sign up at the back out there. I'll be running after the people I do know, grabbing you, lynching you, and saying, give me back details. I thought just as we're here and we're celebrating everything that's been good and everything that's been going on, I thought I'd share a couple of stories. Is that okay with you guys?
Yeah.
You sure about that?
Yeah.
Good shout. My little boy Jack, as you saw, Jack, he's at home and Jack, when we first got him, I should tell you why we first got him. Lucy and I went through a process of adoption, and I know that the Britons have grown up with this, and you've grown up with watching the Britons with all the foster kids and the adopted kids, and I think that got passed on to generations. We adopted Jack and Willow, and Jack, this is what I normally wake up to every morning. Daddy! Papoo! So I come out of my room, and I walk down the hall to his bedroom, and this is when he's about 18 months old, and I walk down to his bedroom, and normally I'd see him stood in his Arsenal kit, ready to go and play some football in the garden, right? He's always stood like Peter Pan. And I walk in, and I hear this one time, Daddy, one more! And I walk down, and I do it again. Next morning, I hear, Daddy! Poo-poo! And I'm like, I hear that right, and he's just saying, look. And I walk down, and 10 feet from the door, we lived in this little three-story townhouse, and I get 10 feet from the door, and I promise you, mums and dads, you understand this, the smell hit me like a train. And I'm like, what in the world is that? How does something so stinky come from someone so cute? Like, what have you done? And he sat out of his baby cot, and he sat looking at his world map that's on the wall, and he's just sat doing his thing, and he's got Thomas the Tank Engine in one hand, he's looking at his world, he's getting on, he's got Thomas in one hand and a piece of poo in the other. Some of you thought, I've never come into church here about poo. He's like, where's he going with this one? There's no theology. What's the theology of this? And he's preach. But anyway, he sat there, and I'm stood there, 5 a.m, and I'm blearing the eye, and I'm thinking, how's he done this? How's he got out of his baby cot? And then I realised, he used to like going to gymnastics, but he used to call it gymplastics. And to get out of his baby cot, Jack has done a front flip out of the cot onto the floor. Now, and I'm stood there looking at him, and then I realised behind him, it's like a bomb has gone off. It's up the carpet, it's gone up the bed, it's gone up the wall, it's gone up his back, it's gone into his hairline, and he's just gone, oh, baby! And I'm looking, and I'm like, oh, bloody, how's he, what is he doing? And he's not realised, obviously, that when he's done it, when he's done his front bit, out the back of the nappy, onto his bum, out everywhere. I even see little bits every now and then scrape off. I kind of stood there, and this is what I share with young people when we go to school. You know, you might have had a tough day, you might have had a tough night, you might have had a tough week, you might have had a tough life, but sometimes in life we can be sat a little bit like Jack. We're sitting there with our world in front of us, we're doing our thing, we're getting on with our day. His day was Thomas the Tank Engine at the time. He's getting on with his day, and then someone says something behind our back. What? And then maybe something doesn't go so right in work. Maybe a family member says something behind my back. Maybe something happens online. Maybe something happens to you directly at school when we're talking to young people. And maybe, just maybe, sometimes we feel a little bit like Jack, sat there doing my work, but I'm covered in it. What's going on here? And I talk to these young people because when they hear this image of God, and there's a God that loves you for being you, I just say to them, you know what? When all the stuff's gone down, when it's really tough and it's really difficult, just like Jack, I look at Jack. And obviously I'm his dad, I mean, I'm going to clean him up. I mean, I'll get Lucy, I'm going to clean him up. But I'm going to clean him up. So I'm going to clean him up, I'm going to get him a new nappy, and we're going to get on with our day. In a similar way, when you say to young people, when you're covered in it, and it's tough, and it's really difficult, there's a God that looks at you and says, yo, you're my boy, you're my girl. I've designed you. Whatever's going on here, let's sort this out, let's clean this up, let's get on with our day. Maybe there's some young people that are really going through it so hard that they are kind. Maybe there's some young people that are going through it so hard that maybe they are thinking about jumping off the roller coaster of life. And maybe just that one little glimmer of hope to say that there's someone that actually cares about you changes everything for them. They can walk out of the school with their head held high, knowing they're a unique individual, knowing that someone's got a plan for their life, whether they believe in God or not, whatever it is they stand for. But in a similar way, I can then say, when Jack was 6 months old, the government sent us a little note saying, is there any chance that Jack could move in with you guys because his mum and dad just, they're not able to look after him. So we adopted him into our family. Just like, similar way, it says in the Bible, that God adopts us into his family. We're just sisters and brothers from another mother. First time a kid starts to cry because he realises actually he's accepted, he belongs, he's designed, he's part of a great family that he never sees because all he hears is this. And we're going in there flipping it over, and God does this thing in 10 seconds that we could do in 10 years. And we see young lives really transformed. I believe in young people. I believe in our nation's young people. I believe that they can be game changers and world changers and the next prime ministers that come along. And I just believe we need to speak hope over them, hope into them. That there is, it's not necessarily whether you become a Christian or not. Some of them won't. But the ones that do, obviously, we capture them and bring them into local church and disciple them. But the ones that don't, maybe they go out of there just knowing that someone cares about them, someone's bothered about them. The way we're going to be told the result of a one-night stand, or they should never have been here, or they're an accident. I believe that we've got this amazing opportunity to say, no, you're worth something, you're designed, you're supposed to be here. No one has your fingerprints, no one ever has had your fingerprints, no one ever will. There's one blueprint for you, and it's you. And these young people, we see them just like lights, like Damascus Road experiences coming on their faces, and because I believe each one of them are legends. So we wrote this song called Legends. Would you like us to do another song? Would that be alright? Legends is all about walking with legends. And I pictured little Jack and Willow walking, when they get to heaven, walking alongside Moses and Nelson Mandela, and picking their hand up and saying, oh, come on, I've got so much to show you. So this one's called Legends. Like we said about the Illuminate School Tours, we're seeing a 90% response to Jesus in those events when we do them. So much so that this year, in July, we're going to Sheffield, doing 12 to 15 schools, and we're going to book a club called the Lead Mill, put the thing in the Lead Mill, the gig in the Lead Mill, which is where all the secular guys, where all the mainstream guys, and then we're asking all the churches, they're going to plant church into the Lead Mill. So when a young person goes home and says, oh, I'm going to this under 18 night on Friday night, it's our Godfrey Job Free, there's a faith message, they come down and respond to what they're responding to. We invite them back on the Sunday to actually plant the church in a club. You see, the thing is about the kids and the young people, the parents are allowing them to do it. In fact, in Gravesend last tour we did, we had an area at the back for 250 parents to come down, and the parents are raving as hard as the kids down there. You've got these 35, 40-year-olds absolutely sweating their back out because they're like, I've never heard this said in the way people are saying it. I've never seen like Jesus presented like this, as in, it's a hope and a future. I just thought it was 101 ways to make my life more boring, but actually, it's freedom. And I truly believe what the Bible says when it says, you know, Jesus came to set the captives free. And the kids often look at me going, free from what? And I was like, free from doing life without them. Free from doing life on your own. Free from doing life where the only way that you know to escape is to take yourself out of the picture. Free from having to cut when you think it's that tough. Free from carrying a knife when you know that's the only way you can defend yourself. Free to have someone that sits with you in the front seat of the driving seat of the roller coaster. I see a lot of kids look at me like, well, why doesn't God sort this out? Why doesn't he sort that out? And I'm like, because if he said yes to everything, the world would be incarnate. But what he does do is that he's gracious enough to parachute in next to you and sit with you in a roller coaster through the tough stuff with his arm around you. When kids hear that, and all they know is what their parents have told them, you see these lights go on in their heads, just going, oh, I'm worth something. I can become that game changer. I can become that legend. I can become something with my life. Some of them respond to Jesus, some of them don't, but the ones that do, we want to take them on that journey. We had this amazing opportunity to go and play over in Houston, in Texas. And it's one of, if you look at that video you just saw, where there's all the lights, the Max lights, it's the NFL football stadium where they had the NFL Super Bowl the year before. 35,000 young people turn up to just dance and have a party, and they booked out at 7 to go over. So we go over, and each one of us flies in at different points, different places, and I flew into Nashville. So I was going to do some writing with some friends. So I spent 5 days in Nashville, and then me and the guitarists, we get on the plane to go over to Houston. As we take off, I said a minute ago, I'm not a mass Dave, I'm not a massive fan of takeoff. Like, it's not like I don't like it, it's just I don't like it. And this, you know, when the plane goes back, pretty face goes, there's a little bit in me that makes my palms sweat, and I'm not a massive fan. Once I'm up, I'm fine, but it's just that little bit. Anyway, captain comes on, he goes, yup. No, he doesn't say yup, he's the captain. He says, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take off, we're going to head up to 35,000 feet, and we'll be in Houston in 5-6 hours' time. Plane starts shooting forward, takes off, and I'm sitting there panicking, gripping, get up through the clouds, I'm like, relax, fuck up, this is good. Get through the clouds, we get up, a little bit further, get up to 35,000 feet, get to cruising altitude, the seatbelt signs come off, and the little trolley dolly, she's not called trolley dolly, she, the little lady with the trolley comes out, and she pushes it forward, she gets to row 3, and I can see her, because I'm sat on the emergency exit, and I can see her, she comes forward, and I'm thinking, oh, it's a nice, fresh, ice cold American Coke. If you've never tried American Coke, try it. It's got so much sugar in it, it's ridiculous. She comes forward, she gets to, you know what I'm talking about, don't you? It's sugary. She gets to row 3, and then she literally hits the brakes on the trolley. She runs back to her little seat, sits down, pulls it down, and double buckles herself in, and sits and stares forward. I can see what she's doing, so I'm looking down, I'm on like row 12, and I'm like, what's going on? As she does that, the plane suddenly lurched left. And I'm looking at the ground and then looking at the space. And then it suddenly looks right and I'm looking at the ground and looking at the space. And I'm thinking, are we dodging like a storm? Like, because there's lots of tornadoes around that kind of time. What are we dodging here? Like, why are we doing this? And then captain comes on and he says, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to make an emergency landing into Memphis. And I was like, Memphis? Memphis is right by Nashville. Like, well, why? And he says, when I say the words brace, 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 you know what position to adopt. So I sit there and I'm like, what? And I look down the aisle, I can see her, and my guitarist group, he looks at me like this, he goes, and I'm sat, I'm like, no, God's got it. And then literally the plane tips forward, and I headbutted the seat, I'm watching The Queen on Netflix, right? I headbutted the seat in front of me, and I'm like, whoa, what's going on? And then for 1 minute, literally the plane went into weightlessness. The whole plane just went deathly silent. No one said a thing. As we went into weightlessness, I started to float out of my seat, so I hold my seat up and I'm tipping forward like this, stopping myself going forward, and I think to myself, what is going on? The plane just starts to make its descent, and it starts dipping its nose. That noise comes in, my face starts turning like this. The pilot comes on again. He says, "Yo, ladies." No, he doesn't. He says, "Ladies and gentlemen, oxygen masks are going to be released in the next couple of seconds." Down come the oxygen masks, and the whole plane fills with smoke. I'm sitting there, and I know what the drill is. I've been on 1,500 million planes. I know what the drill is. And the oxygen mask is in front of me, like this, in the movement of the plane. And the plane's shaking. I'm looking out the window, thinking, is there an engine on fire? Like, what's going on? I look at Roo, and Roo's like, the guy next to me just puts his mask on really slowly and just sits back. The guy behind me starts to talk a little bit, and the captain comes on and he says, "Ladies and gentlemen, this is going to hurt. It's going to hurt your heads, it's going to hurt your chest, it's going to hurt your ears, because the pressure of us getting down to earth, it's going to make it painful, so just hold tight. When I get to brace, 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 you know what to do, put your head in your hands and hold on tight." I stood there, and I sat there, and I was like, oh my days, holding onto my belt. And as we started to descend, the whole plane erupted. Everybody started screaming. There were mums screaming, babies screaming, the guy next to me starts screaming, the guy behind me starts screaming, he's holding his ears going. And the thing that was coming out, this guy behind me was going, dear Lord Jesus, save me, help me, save me. The guy next to me was mumbling prayers, going, Lord Jesus, please help me, God, God, please help me, please save me, please save me. The woman in front was screaming, God, save my kids. I'm there just like, what the heck is going on? And I hadn't put my oxygen mask on. The oxygen mask was dangling in front of me for about 3 minutes while we started to descend, and I quickly reached out, grabbed it, pulled it towards me, put it on, and started to breathe the oxygen. We started shooting towards that, like quick. My Apple Watch, I've actually got it on taking my calories while we're bouncing around to see how many calories we're going at church service. My Apple Watch went from 80 BPM to 180 within about 15 seconds. And I sat there and I just prayed this prayer and I said, dear Lord Jesus, just to myself, thank you that Jesus died on the cross. Thank you that you love me. And I'm sorry for those things I've done, and I'll see you on the other side. And I was like, just make this really quick. Like, don't make this painful. Make this just over in a quick sentence. And I made my peace. We start going down, and then the plane starts really filling with smoke. And I'm like, something's on fire here. It really smells of smoke. And get through the clouds, and no one can see anything. I can't see anything. I don't know what's going on. I don't know where we are. Everybody is praying. Everybody's screaming out. We get to like 10 seconds after going through the clouds, that's what it feels like. Bang! The plane hits the runway and bounces down the runway. I come out of the gangplank and I walk out, my hands have gone green with fear. We just sat there, and all the Yankee guys around me were knocking back in shots of tequila to try and sort themselves out. And I'm just sat there looking like dazed, like what has just happened? The pilot comes out and he says, "Ladies and gentlemen, when we're at 35,000 feet, the plane decompressed. So something had pierced the outside fuselage of the plane. And to get you down to earth, I had to get us below 10,000 feet before I pass out. Otherwise, we all would have died and it all would have finished." And I sat there for about 3 minutes, and I kind of had these two thoughts. When I looked around the plane, and it was deathly silent, and then we started to make the descent, why did everybody pray? Why did everybody call out God? Why did everybody call out Jesus? Why did they call out to something that maybe they've never believed in, or maybe they've never actually thought about it, or maybe someone has told them? Why did they? And then I thought this, why when I'm walking around the house, not now, but back in the day before I really knew Jesus, why when I stubbed my toe, did I used to go, oh my God, that hurt? Why did I say that? Because this is why I truly believe there's a God-shaped hole in here. That sometimes we have the opportunity of filling it with other stuff. And we try to fill it, it's like sticking a hexagon into a circle, because we try to fill it with other stuff, and actually it's just a God-shaped hole. But sometimes we don't even know it's there. Why? Because no one's ever told them. No one's ever actually ever spoken that stuff to people. And these people were properly screaming out to Jesus. Why did everybody pray? They prayed because they wanted to know there was a hope. They wanted to know they had a future. They wanted to know that when the lights go out, and I genuinely thought it was game over. I genuinely got down and I was like, I am so happy to be alive right now. Everybody wanted to know there's something more to life than this. Everybody wanted to know that when it finishes, that there's something else. So you all cried out. The second thought I had was the oxygen mask popped down, and it sat in front of me, dangling, like this. And I'm looking at it for about 3 minutes, staring at it. What do I do with that? The oxygen mask is going to be the one thing that saves me. The oxygen mask is going to be the one thing that I have to reach out and grab, and I have to physically put it towards myself. They tell you that when they get on the plane, they say to make the oxygen flow, grab the mask and put it, releases the oxygen. I actually have to physically release it, put it on my mouth. For me, some of my life was a little bit like that. Knowing that there was a God, knowing that suffering was gone, knowing that it was difficult, knowing that life was hard, but there was an oxygen mask, there was a lifeline laid right in front of me. Every single week when I used to turn up to church, because my parents used to make me go to church, maybe I used to go to some youth events, and maybe I switched off for about 10 years and just went, nah, I'm not interested. But the lifeline was always there. The secret to survival when the plane goes down is grab the lifeline, pull it towards you, put it on your mouth and breathe deeply. Some of you, let's be honest, for me, you've walked in here today, and it's been a tough week, it's been a tough day, a tough night. And maybe this is your opportunity to reach out to that lifeline and say, actually, do you know what? I need to put you back in the driving seat. I need to breathe deeper of your life, and I need to understand your peace. There's a little verse in the Bible, like John 16, 33, that says this. I have told you these things that you may have peace in this world. That you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart. I've overcome the world. And I read that this morning, and I was like, I'm going to put that in there, because I just know that in a world where there's no peace, in a world where there's so much turmoil, and there's so much stuff going on, and there's so much noise going on, it's really easy to lose our peace. And for some of us, maybe it's just coming back to Jesus and saying, actually, do you know what, I just want to have peace. That peace that transcends all understanding. Come and guard my heart with that. Or maybe this could be your first time where you said, actually, I come to church every Sunday and I go to youth group and I go with my parents because my parents take me all. That's like trying to go to McDonald's every Sunday and turn into a Big Mac. That doesn't make you a Christian. You really have to, for yourself, choose. Grab the lifeline, put it towards yourself. Little verse in the Bible where Jesus says, a knock on the door and waiting for you to answer it, basically. Waiting for you to open the door, waiting for you to pull the lifeline, waiting for you to breathe deep. It's your choice. I was just thinking when I left the house yesterday, dads, you'll be used to this. When you go from one kid to two kids, it now takes 3/4 more time to get out of the house, doesn't it? And every time I go to leave the house, I'm literally turning the house over, trying to find my wallet, I'm trying to find my keys. And everything's turned upside down, and everything has been, like, the front door is just coming and stuck, and the coats are on the floor, the kitchen's turned upside down, and I'm going, Lucy, where's my keys? Where's my wallet? She says, have you looked? I'm like, of course I've looked. Looked everywhere. It's on the side. I'm like, there's 15 freaking sides. I then stand there, and she says, do you want me, this is the worst thing she can say to me, do you want me to do a Lucy look? She said, you've done a Jack and a Daddy look, haven't you? Jack says, yeah, yeah. Meaning we just skirted and just blurred and haven't seen the keys that are right there. Do you want me to do a Lucy look? I'm like, yeah, go on, do a Lucy look. So she looks all around the house. She turns everything over. She's as frustrated as me because we've got to leave the house. And then she goes, did you check your pockets? I put my hand up, my keys are in my right hand. But you see, sometimes, just like that verse about peace, is that we can look at a verse like that and then completely forget it's even there. You can read a verse like that in the Bible, or you can read stuff about hope and about future and about Jeremiah 29:11, I know the plans I have for you, and all these Bible promises, and completely forget that they're there. And maybe it takes a Lucy look for you to actually hear it again, see it again, because you forget that God's given us those promises in the first place. And then sometimes, because we forget, we end up going to places where we know that we've already defeated this stuff, we've already beaten this stuff, but we start putting that in the driving seat. Because we forget those promises were there in the first place, and we start looking to the stuff that we've already dealt with. Maybe it's attitudes, maybe it's, for me, it's language. Maybe it's substances, maybe there's something that's got a grip on you guys in here, maybe on me. Maybe there's something that just turns back and says, actually, this is a redirection, like a reset button, where you turn back to God and you say, actually, do you know what? I need to know this peace. I need to re-know this hope. I need to re-know that there's something more to life than this. When we're on the Chasing the Willow tour, every night they'd have like 40 or 50 girls come backstage to their buses and ask Mum and Dad if he needs to explain about that. And we'd go and sit in our bus with the band, and we'd just sit there and we'd have a pray, maybe have a beer, walk back out, and then after a couple of hours all the mayhem had finished, and I'd walk around to one of the buses. And I sat and I looked in, and I could hear something coming out of the door, and I put my head in, and there's Jason's MD, there's Jason sat on the stairs, and then there's a couple of his fitness trainers sat above him. And they're playing the song Oceans. And I'm like, are you for real? Whoa, you're playing Oceans? And I couldn't get made about this, so I looked and I was like, I'm in the wrong bus, I'm in my bus. No, no, it's not my bus. Put my head back in, and I was like, you're playing Oceans? Why are you playing Oceans? And they said, look, when this is what Jason said, and Chuck is indeed, they said, when it all goes pear-shaped and everything goes wrong and everything goes mayhem, it's all gone too much, this is our reset button. And I'm like, so, do you believe in Jesus? And like, yeah, we're all pastors' kids. We all grew up in church playing drums. We all grew up in church playing bass. We all grew up in church, and this is our reset button because we know there's only one way. Now, obviously, their moral compass was slightly askew, so don't go following that moral compass. But the point of the story is that when you press that reset button, it's almost like when Jesus forms that shape, we've got the bridge. I can't stretch his arm out because I'm having an operation on it, but you can imagine the cross. Is that when he performs that, we're over here doing our thing. So for those boys, they're doing their stuff, and God's looking at them, going, yo, you're a boy, you're a girl, I designed you. I designed you the way that you are, but we can't hear it because all this stuff gets in the way. All the things in life, all the lack of peace, all the no hope, all the stuff that we do that we know that perhaps we shouldn't be doing, or maybe the stuff that we're feeling this God shaped hole, but that bridge that Jesus forms allows God, because every time one person turns and they say yes to him, God comes running across that cross and meets you right here. He goes, leaves the 99, and he goes after one person. So even if this is for one person today, even if this reset button, this grabbing the lifeline, maybe this oxygen, this re-getting that peace, if that's just for one person in here today, that's why we came all the way from Manchester to share this. Even if it's for some young people that you've never made that decision for yourself and you do want to say yes to hope, maybe this is for you. Or maybe you just had a really tough time at the moment and you want that peace back. I'm simply going to ask for something really brave. And it's brave because it's difficult to admit it sometimes. So I'm just going to ask, with everybody in the place with their eyes closed, that if this is you and maybe you've found it difficult, maybe you're having a tough time, maybe you want to know this Jesus for the first time, or maybe you want to hit that reset button and grab the lifeline, I'm going to ask you to do something really brave. When I get to three, I'm simply going to ask you to pop your right hand up in the air. But here's why it's brave. It's brave because everybody's in here. It's brave because it's one of the hardest things you'll ever do, because there might be some stuff you have to put down and attitudes that have to change. But God's never going to leave you because he sits in the driving seat with you. It's brave because it might be something you've never done before. But I promise you, when you know you've got a hope and a future, that changes everything. So I'm simply going to count to three, and if that's you and you want to make that decision with me here today, then simply put your hand in there. Number one, Jesus died on the cross so you can have life. So you can have hope, not because you're guilty, but because he took that stuff so you don't have to go through it. Number two, he loves you that much that he's given us a hope and a future. When it all comes to an end, there's so much more. And number three, if you want to put him in the driving seat, just pop your right hand in the air right now. If you want to make that decision, well done, amazing. See that, amazing. And I'm simply going to pray, just real simple. And we'll pray it all together as a church so no one's left out. Father God, thank you for loving me. I say yes to you right now.